Ray Farrar from TSN joins us. Ray, how are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Good. I'm great. You know what? I understand why some people are upset that Burns didn't get in when he was alive, but and so he's not there to appreciate it. But I'm for his family, obviously, it's huge. And, this is a long time coming. Why do you think, and I don't know if you talk to the voting guys, I know they're pretty hush-hush on what they're allowed to say and whatnot. Any reason why it took this long for him to get in?
I don't know. Nobody says anything. They're not allowed to. It's part of their commitment to the voting and to being on the committee. I've always thought that there should be a waiting period when the player retires, whether it's 2 or 3 years, whatever you want. And then if you're in, you're in, and if you're not, you're not. I thought it was nonsense that Freddie Shiro was inducted last year, 40 years after the Stanley Cups. I mean, if he was a Hall of Fame coach, he should have been in a couple of years, past the grace period, then he should have been in. Right. I don't understand why it takes 15 years for somebody to get in. Does that mean that they got better in those 15 years? Is Pat Burns a better coach today than he would have been a few years ago? Of course not. And so the mechanisms of voting players and coaches and managers into the Hall of Fame, to me, has always been a bit confounding. And this is just one of those examples. I mean, I don't have a particular reason why he's in today and not last year or the year before or the year before that.
You look at Eric Lindros, who I think should be in the Hockey Hall of Fame, right? There seems to almost be a bias against him because he was perceived as a spoiled guy and it was un-Canadian not to accept a play for the Quebec Nordiques. It seems even 24 years later, that's hanging over his head. What do you think?
I would say that's probably reasonable. Now, his parents aren't going into the Hall of Fame.
I agree.
But I know, I can guarantee you the way that whole mess was handled as an 18-year-old has lingered a long time. Peter Forsberg is in the Hall of Fame today. Eric Lindros has almost identical points per game as Peter Forsberg.
Mm-hmm.
I think because, and Eric Lindros is among Canada's most decorated international players. I would say Forsberg's inclusion today will expedite Lindros's inclusion. I played against the guy. There was a portion of time that there was nobody better. That line in Philadelphia, which basically centered around Lindros, and it was LeClaire and Renberg, they were the league's best line. And there were guys in the Hall of Fame that, yeah, they may have a Stanley Cup, or yeah, they might have had longevity, but they were never, ever, ever the most dominant player.
Yep.
And Eric Lindros was. He should be in the Hall of Fame.
100% will agree with you on it, Ray. I think at times we get so caught up, like people always argue, well, he doesn't have any cups. Winning a Stanley Cup is a team thing, individual.
Trevor Lewis should be in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, well, exactly, yeah.
Or no. Jordan Nolan. I mean, in all due respect to those guys, they got two Stanley Cups. There's lots of players, lots of great players that have none. Bernie Federko shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. He never won a Stanley Cup. Oh, he's got 1,300 points. Like the Stanley Cup thing, that to me, Jason, is important if it validates, helps you put some validation on the player's career. But this isn't the team Hall of Fame. This is the Hall of Fame. He should be in it. Should Mike Gartner not be in it? He never won a Stanley Cup. Oh, he got 700 goals.
Yeah.
So I think the arguments and the excuses get moved around to fit whatever the people want it to fit. The criteria is muddy. I think the standards in the Hall of Fame the bar has been lowered. It's become the Hall of Fame of really, really, really good instead of the Hall of Fame of great, which I would prefer. I know there's politicking and and people trying to, you know, to work their way around how do you get this many votes and how do you get that many votes. I know there is, because these stories have been around for decades. And it's a shame, because it is the most incredible place. If you're a hockey fan and you've never been, you really should go. It's just it's a wonderful place to walk around and to see and to, you know, and to celebrate the greatness of the game. And I want it to have the highest of standards.
Ray Ferraro from TSN joins us. Yeah, I agree with you. And I guess as it now, we say that, you know, the very good guys. So is there any of the four players this year that you felt, or do you think these guys are all great and should be in?
Oh, I have zero problem with this year's class. Now, had Rob Blake played his whole career in Los Angeles, I think a lot of his greatness would have maybe been under the radar a little bit, because the Kings weren't the Kings of today. When he went and played in Colorado, I think people saw what he could be like with a better surrounding cast. He was mean. He was among the very, very best at his position for a long period of time. And, you know, people will, again, use the, you know, was he a cup winner? Did he have multiple All-Star selections? See, some of that too becomes bogus, because for a great portion of his career, well, his whole career, Nick Lidstrom was there. Well, there goes one spot. Right, so now the entire league is competing for one spot on the All-Star team.
Yeah, it's true.
So that becomes a little bit bogus too.
Ray, today the Philadelphia Flyers once again wheeling and dealing. Scott Hartnell waives no move clause, goes to Columbus. He has 5 years left at 4.75 on his deal. He's 32 years of age, just turned. So basically he'll play his final year of the contract when he's 36 years old. And then meanwhile, RJ Umberger, who did play in Philadelphia before, goes back to the Flyer. He's also 32 years of age, but has fewer years left in his contract. Hartnell's clearly the better player right now. What do you think of this trade from a Columbus perspective? You know, does this make him that much better in your mind?
Well, it makes him better, because Umberger wasn't in their lineup. You know, by the end of the year, he was out of the lineup a lot of times. He was a healthy scratch, and, you know, there was clearly some discord between Umberger and the coaches. Now, I did a lot of that Flyer first-round series, and Hartnell's got some, you know, the biggest issue for Hartnell is getting around the ice. He's got some issues with that. He doesn't move. He was never a great skater, mm-hmm. but it looks like he's, you know, he's lost a little bit of a step. And it'll be a real important summer for him training-wise to see if he can gain that step back, or if he's on, you know, kind of step one of the slow decline that every player gets on, you know, right? Nobody's as fast at 36 as they are at 30. That just doesn't happen. And so I'm interested by this trade. I like it in the sense that Philadelphia cleared two years of contract room at the back end of the deal. Hartnell's a better scorer. You know, does he become a guy that plays with Ryan Johansson perhaps? Does he give them more depth on their second power play? Because as I said earlier, it clearly had moved past RJ Umberger.
I look at Columbus, and, you know, they moved from the West into the East, and we saw essentially 10 Western teams make the playoffs this year with Detroit and Columbus in the East. Like, I think the East is wide open. Like, Boston, you know, they're getting older every year, and I think in a few years they'll really regret that Tyler Seguin trade, just because he's that good offensively. But I think the East is really wide open, Ray, and that the Columbus Blue Jackets are, you know, one other move, and suddenly that's a team that you could see as a top three team.
There is... I mean, there was always the danger of, like most of us, I think this year felt there was Boston and Pittsburgh and then everybody else in the East. And then about three quarters of the way through the season, it became Boston and then everybody else in the East. And then the Rangers won in the playoffs. And I think they're in a phase in the East that it will be that way. And that is, there'll be an unpredictability to it. There'll be, yes, a team like Columbus could be a team that is one that you don't want to face. And it could be a team that misses the playoffs. Because I don't know about you, Jason, but I envision a really tightly clumped together Eastern Conference for a number of years. I don't see an emerging team that just takes a leap and you look at them and say, wow, nobody else is even close to those guys.
Ray, what do you, is Mark Recchi a Hall of Famer at some point in your mind?
Yeah. I think because of the sheer volume of his work. You know, was he 1,300 points?
No, it's 50. He had 1,500 points.
Yeah. I mean, like, how do you keep that out of the Hall of Fame? I don't care if he played for 1,000 years. Yeah. It's 1,500 points. Yeah. And yes, he was a winner, and that does help. I just don't, if you took away the Stanley Cups from Mark Recchi, I would say you would have to equate him like Mike Gartner. Right? The sheer volume is he's got to get in. See, Mark Recchi was a more valuable player for a longer period of time than people might remember. See, I don't think Dave Andrechuk even, and I guess this contradicts my own argument, is that I don't think Dave Andrechuk is a Hall of Famer.
Okay.
And he's got 600 goals.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a really, really good player. But he was never a guy, I don't know, he never made an impact long enough for me. And so I guess in saying that, I'm glad this came up, is that I don't think there can be one set of criteria to elect or not elect a player to the Hall of Fame. I think you have to look at each player on a case-by-case basis. And you can't let yourself be drawn into the argument, because player A is in, then player B must go in.
Yeah.
I think that's where the whole thing gets muddied, because I'm sure there'll be an article today, tomorrow, the next day, because so-and-so is in, then this guy has to be in. Now, I said earlier, I think Forsberg's inclusion will expedite Lindros's inclusion, but not because Forsberg's in do I think Lindros is a Hall of Famer. I think Lindros is a Hall of Famer. I think because Peter Forsberg is in, the similarity of their numbers will help people open their eyes a little bit wider in Lindros's case.
A few other quick things, Ray. We're getting 5 days away from the draft. We saw some trades today. There's lots of rumors and rumblings of other ones. Willie DeJardin, to me, is a great story. I the only coach I could figure who was older as a rookie head coach was Lou Lamoriello, but he did it on an interim basis when he fired his guy and didn't want to replace him, so he just came down from the GM spot. But I couldn't find a head coach who was older than 57 as a rookie, and I think that's great because he just kept persevering. As a former player, does the age of your coach matter when it comes to relating to players? Is there any truth to that in your mind?
No, because I've seen a lot of younger guys have no clue how to relate to their players.
Yeah.
And I played for Al Arbor, who was 62, I believe, when he was coaching us. And Al had no trouble relating to us. I had no trouble relating to Al. None whatsoever.
Okay.
I think it depends, Jason, person to person. You know, Willie's long been known as a communicator, and that will be put to the test. But he's been in the NHL as an assistant coach. I guess the question is, if he was such a hot commodity now, how come it took till 57 to be that hot commodity? And I don't have the answer to it, because he's long. You know, when he was in Medicine Hat, he was thought as an excellent coach, and then when he went to the NHL as an assistant coach, he was thought of as a real technical, real sharp guy. Then he went to the American League, and Dallas has become they won the Calder Cup this year, but they played a real up tempo, pace game. Now we'll see what he brings to Vancouver. But it's crazy because there's so many good coaches, and you've got to be in the right spot at the right time, and your name's got to come up with enough momentum that somebody thinks it's a good idea to get you in for the interview. And once you get in for that interview, then you have to speak above whatever your volume of work tells them. And obviously Willie DeJardin impressed two people, because Pittsburgh thought they had a deal with him, and he ends up in Vancouver. So two teams all of a sudden thought it was a great idea to hire Willie DeJardin. And I wonder today when he puts his feet up if he says, man, this took a long time.
Yeah. No, it's just an interesting one for him. It sounds like Doug Lidster might be coming with him in some fashion.
Yeah, Doug was in Texas with him.
Yeah.
on his staff.
So former. Now, one other one right now. I know because your wife, Cammie, is in the Hockey Hall of Fame. The women got opened up. So she probably know, and that's why I want to ask you, because I'm sure she's discussed this with you. There's a lot that say, you know what, you get the four guys and there are two females eligible. But it doesn't mean they have to go in. And when you look at the female game, you know, outside of Canada and United States, there's not a lot of great candidates. Does she feel there's a lot of other women knocking on the door, or will it be a few more years before some of them are legitimately Hall of Famers?
Oh, I think there's probably more candidates than people might think. Again, the criteria is different than what the men's criteria is. But I think right now the criteria has to be, did you make an impact in helping grow the sport? Have your numbers had such great impact that you stand apart from everybody else? And if you look at the women that have gone in, there's been an impact to each of them. And I believe you'll see a European woman in the next little while. But there's no... I think the one thing people don't quite understand is the women can be voted in aside from the four men.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, Jason, a lot of people don't understand that.
Yeah.
In particular, the year Cammie went in, there was not four men that went in. And people had this misunderstanding that because Cammie and Angela James went in, that those were two spots taken away from the men, and that wasn't the case.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's a tech. There could be six players every year now, four men and two women. And I just noticed, you know, and there's always going to be great debate every year, which is fine. Like I think Eric Lindros should be in the Hall of Fame without a doubt. I think one guy who's on the fence, and I want to ask you your opinion, Ray, because you were kind of in the same stature as him. Right, Theron Fleury was a little guy in a big man's game when it was really clutch and grab time, and he still averaged a point a game. Now I know, you know, it kind of went off the rails. We've seen his movie and everything else. Is he a borderline Hall of Famer in your mind?
Borderline for me.
Okay.
He put up incredible numbers. He did some really incredible things, but you know, the balance to it is there were a lot of years that weren't so great, and that puts him on the borderline for me.
Yeah. Because you're a smaller guy. I think you can attest to that. Like, it's harder, right? Like, it's harder to be a point-of-game player when you're 5'7" than if you're 6'2".
And there was a portion of time there, being 5'7", or, you know, whatever his hockey card said, mine said 5'10". it was a rodeo out there. So, like, you were in hand-to-hand wrestling matches all over the place. It wasn't free flow, and well, not that the game's free flow now, but it wasn't as much a skating game as it is today. And for a point of game at his stature was, I mean, you know, nobody wanted to give him a chance, and he just willed his way into the opportunity in Calgary.
Yeah, no, he was a tough little SOB, you know, and obviously had to overcome a lot of different things. You know what? I have a lot of respect for him for coming out and writing his book and doing that movie, because he kind of showed everything that he had to go through and admitted that it even got the best of him, of course, especially in New York. So.
Yeah, you know, I mean, how would you ever be able to do anything but just empathize with him? You know, fortunately, you know, I never had any hardships, you know, that Theron went through. And, you know, I've always had this thought about him that, I read once, I want to say the quote is attributed to Al Coates, and he said he's like a rubber ball. You throw him against the wall and he comes back faster at you. And I always thought that about Fleury, and that's, I think, just kind of sums up a little bit about the, you know, the tempest that he played in.
Yeah, I totally agree. Ray, quickly, fun. Any team going to surprise us this week in a major move before Friday?
Well, I don't know if it's a surprise. I think Florida will deal that pick.
Yep.
You know, maybe the team that moves up to one might surprise us, but anytime the number one pick gets moved, I mean, it's clearly a pretty significant play.
Yeah. Well, history shows, right? The Florida Panthers have traded down from number one twice, both times when they won the lottery. In 2002, they won it. And then they traded down and actually had to give up more picks to trade down, arguably the dumbest trade in history. Then the next year, they traded down from 1 to 3 because they had Luongo. They traded with Pittsburgh, and you know, they got Samuelson and a number 55 and the number 3 for Carcillo, it turns out to be, and Fleury. So this year they won the lottery. They're at number one. They're probably going to trade down again.
The fact that there is a history to Florida trading down from number one tells you all you need to know.
Exactly. Ray, good to talk to you. Enjoy the week.
You betcha, Jason. We'll talk to you then.